Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast12. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast12 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast12. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
But don't play with me, cause you're playing with fire.
Good morning, welcome to Playing with Fire. My name is Omni. Food, Wine, and Lifestyle Show. I'm your host, Tom Shortell, and I'm here with co-host, dear friend, producer, and otherwise English major, Stu Schrager. Good morning, Stu.
What a welcome. Thank you, thank you. Here we are. We find ourselves in the middle of October already.
I know, man. It goes quick, right? I just wish it would go from October to April. And on the whole winter.
You know, again, things are happening so quickly, and it's amazing because I've been working with Rally Motors regarding a program that involves them with the Oyster Festival in Oyster Bay, which is this weekend.
Yeah.
But it seems so far away, and now it's here.
I know. It goes quick. It really. You know, it's funny. Fall's one of my favorite. You know, summer I love it because it allows me to go to the beach and play golf or whatever. But there's something about fall. You know, it changes seasons, especially in the Northeast. You know,
Wait. Let's back up a little bit.
Yes.
I know you as Tom Shortell, the chef, author, restaurateur. But to me, you have a biker, a hippie biker persona.
Mm-hmm.
And now you're saying you're like a surfer guy?
No, I go to the beach. I don't surf.
And what do you do at the beach?
I lay there with my fat rear end and read. You know?
Really?
Yeah, it's, you know, I throw a party for a living every night, you know, kind of thing. So for me, the relaxation end of it is critical. And, you know, I live very close to the water. I'm on like a tidal pond out east. And right down the block is this little private beach, you know. So
do you like schlep a beach blanket or you have a chair?
No, a chair. I'm too old to be laying down all day, you know what I mean? So, because I may never get up at this point. a chair's fine. You know? But it's fun. It's a bayside beach, so you're not worried about waves knocking you over. It's not the ocean. But it's great. You know, you get hot, you jump in the water. It's fabulous. You can go clamming right there or whatever. So, yeah, I it's my little getaway by myself. And nobody bothers me. I don't have the phone, you know, whatever. But, yeah. But then fall, I mean, I was just upstate this week, actually. I was up in Hyde Park. I went to Culinary Institute, where I graduated 150 years ago. And
pretty good because I went to my 100th high school reunion. You just did your 150th college reunion.
Yeah, totally. So there's nine of us that are amazingly still alive, friends and roommates. And so we get together a couple times a year, and sometimes it's nine people, sometimes it's five, four, three, whatever. But we had four guys. We got together, and first night we went to a restaurant up there, which I'm not going to name because, you know, it just wasn't that good, you know. But then the second night we went to Bocuse restaurant in school, and you know, when students are cooking, it's always dicey, you know. I mean, you have an instructor there, but, you know, kids are kids, and they're goofing off or whatever they were doing. But I got to tell you, it was really well done. You know, the service was great. Waitress we had was knowledgeable. Kids knew how to pour wine. It was nice to see them, you know, kind of grasping the information. So I recommend it highly. If anybody's ever up that way or you want to make a special trip, they have three restaurants up there. They have the Caterina de Medici, which is an Italian place. I think it's sponsored by Calavita Olive Oil, if I'm not mistaken. And then they have a place called American Bounty, which is like sort of a contemporary American restaurant. And then Bocuse, which is kind of like, they say it's French, but it's not really. It's kind of French/American, you know, but really well done. And the school's a trip. I mean, you know, When I graduated in 73, which was the first year it was in Hyde Park, my first year I went to the school that was still in New Haven, Connecticut. So when they bought this place, it was kind of a dump. It was an old monastery. But now it's like nuts. I mean, I guess they have big benefactors now. They have a computer science center. They got a thing called the Egg, which looks like the food court at Roosevelt Field. They got gymnasiums, basketball courts, swimming pools, movie stars. It's just... And I think that's the reason now it's $45,000 a year, you know, rather than $2,500 when I went. You know. But it's really kind of a cool place to go. Just look at the, you know, the grounds, walk the grounds, or check the school out. But definitely check the restaurants out. They're worthwhile going. And they're a relative bargain. I mean, you know, it's $60 for three courses, which isn't terrible by today's standards. And they have a very, very good wine list, which I was perusing for half an hour. And... you know, the kids are into it, so it's kind of fun to see, you know, young people, especially the service end, you know, because we don't have enough waiters and waitresses anymore. That used to be kind of a, you know, a place where college kids would go and they would get these jobs on Fridays and then hopefully, you know, learn the trade and then step up to the better restaurants. And some of them used to make careers out of it. You know, in Europe, waiting on tables is considered a career choice. Here it's like, you know, that's what you do while you're waiting for your real job. And it's a shame because, you know, there's an awful lot of, I think there's an awful lot of value in waiting tables. It teaches you patience and tolerance and cooperation and, you know, all skills that you need for, you know, any kind of endeavor that you want to undertake. So, I don't know. I just think that, you know, we don't have any, like, waiter schools that I know of. You know of any still? Waiter schools? I mean, no, right? But if we had a couple of those, we'd have a lot more... you know, talent. To
so that's so from. Interesting you say that because I was in the car with Carrie the other night and her daughter had called her and we were talking and she's a pharmacy student. So mm-hmm. she's in her fifth year of a 6-year program. And Carrie started saying that I guess it's called a residency you have to in your 6th year or whatever. And one of them was very... consumer-based, you know, working at a CVS or something at the counter.
Yeah.
And her daughter said, you know, oh, that's not for me. You know, and her mother goes, you know, well, that's all part of it.
It better be for you.
So it's interesting because in the same sense, a counter person at a pharmacy store would be so compatible to a waiter or a waitress or even a wine server.
Uh-huh.
Which I say because I was at a small restaurant in Merrick the other night. Tony
and Luigi's.
Yeah, and first somebody came over and she said, "I'll be your wine server" or something like that. And then we had a regular waitress that was serving us the food, and I said, "Well, what happens if I order, you know, pasta a la vodka? Which one of you, you know, would handle that?" Situation.
What did they tell you? Leave the human to Chris Rock? Or
yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's something you touched on something that just, I don't know, maybe it's because I'm a crotchety old restaurant guy or whatever. I just get completely like mystified by why people say, "I am John, I will be a waitress, waiter this evening." You know, who gives it? You know, it's, I guess it's nice. But it's like the real pros don't do that. You know, they don't come over and announce themselves. And then they had this other, I think it started at Outback where they would kneel. You know, they would get eye level with you.
Really?
They would kneel at your table to take your order. I'm like, dude, that's creepy, man. Just stand up, you know. You know, waiter is basically there to, you know, to bring you stuff and take stuff away and, you know.
That brings up a memory. I could have sworn I was at a restaurant recently where the waiter or the waitress sat down at our table.
Yeah, that's casual, you know. The other thing, too, that mystifies me is when people go, "So what would you eat if you were here?" Like, you know, like your opinion matters. It's like, and I get the premise of it. They see the dishes. They know what the food's like, and they know which is more popular and which isn't.
But I fell into that trap just the other night. I was at a fundraising event for the Nassau County Police Explorers, mm-hmm. which are kids. It's like Boy Scouts or Girl Scouts, it's associated with police, law enforcement. And there was a stuffed shrimp. It was over at Jericho Terrace, which I was very, very impressed with. The decor, I guess they had recently remodeled and everything. What a beautiful ambiance that the facility has. Mm-hmm. But I was sitting down for the dinner, and they asked me if I wanted the choice of five items. And I was torn between a salmon miso or something and a stuffed shrimp. Mm-hmm. And I said to the waitress, you know, I'm torn. What, you know, like she was going to help me decide.
Well, yeah, that's it. You know, it's time to be an adult. You know, pick one. You know, when I get the high, I'm Meredith, and I'll be your waitress this evening. I'm like, all right, that's fine, Meredith. But, you know, we're not going to have any long conversations here. You know, you're going to take my order, disappear, come back, take it again, disappear, you know. I don't know. It's just the whole thing is, it's just.
So when we started this conversation this morning, it was very Oyster Bay centric.
Yeah.
I was talking about the Oyster Fest, but we actually have a guest today.
That's right.
And he is involved with something also that is involving Oyster Bay. Actually, yesterday I was at a press conference for Foodie Week.
Uh-huh.
And let me let you do the introduction.
All right.
But it's going to be a fascinating show, I'm sure.
So good morning. We have John Richard from Long Island Food Critic here. Good morning, John.
Hi, Tom.
How are you?
Very nice having you on the show here.
All right, cool. So talk to me about this, Foodie Week, right? You got Oyster Bay Foodie Week?
Foodie Week, yes. And it's something that we do in conjunction with the town. And we've got a couple of dozen restaurants that participate. And we focus on the, you know, the sit-down, more so fine dining places, mm-hmm. that really are the fabric of people's lives. And, you know, they're really a big part of the neighborhood. They're a big part of the community. This is where people have celebrations, anniversaries, you know, grandma's 80th, mm-hmm. bridal showers. And today's environment is such a, it's in such a way, you know, the economy is in such a way, starting with COVID, but still, you know, it rings true today, where a lot of restaurants are in financial, they're financially struggling. And it feels like every day, maybe it's every couple of days, we hear of a restaurant that's going out of business. And so we wanted to do something that was positive to get people out to restaurants and trying new things and you know, that kind of a thing. So we wanted restaurants that, you know, also were going to, you know, offer unique Foodie Week selections, and they all, you know, as well as their regular menus. Foodie Week really has become a showcase of restaurants and eateries that, you know, they have the opportunity through Foodie Week to highlight their finest culinary creations. And, you know, residents looking to find participating venues or nominate their favorite dining dish or restaurant can take part in the Food Critic Awards and Food Critic Survey, you know, at foodieweek.com. You know, they can go to foodieweek.com and, you know, put their input in so that we have some more input for when we do the Food Critic Awards. But one positive thing that's come out as a result is the from COVID, we feel, is the continued success of outside dining. Mm-hmm. That was something that, depending on the area, there wasn't a lot of that. But now it seems it's something that's become highly sought after by both the establishments and the, you know, the patrons themselves. So yesterday, like Stu was saying, we did a televised news conference with the town of Oyster Bay. The town of Oyster Bay has been sponsoring this. And we had a couple of restaurateurs. We had Bob Gebbia of Palmer's American Grill, Richard Cutler, the owner of Mill Creek Tavern in Bayville, and Carl Martone, which is the owner of a newly minted Ficarra restaurant in Hicksville. And, of course, board members from the town of Oyster Bay and Supervisor Joseph Saladino himself. And we did that so we can showcase and highlight and get publicity about Foodie Week so that people know about it. And again, you just really go to foodieweek.com and you can see a list of the restaurants that participate. And you can pick one. You can see menus that are being offered. And, you know, pretty much that's what it comes down to.
So it's the town of Oyster Bay like not the town itself, of it, the but township.
Right, not okay. The village, because I guess is what everyone thinks of as the main, you know, the,
and
the,
it's
the
kind
main
of,
street
is
part.
It kind of modeled after like Long Island Restaurant Week, where there's a, like a prefix, like a set price, and then choice of 5, 6, 33 items, whatever it is, that kind of thing?
Well, what we wanted to do was be different than Long Island Restaurant Week, right, because there are so many different restaurant weeks.
Yeah, there's like 100 of them.
On Long Island, I could probably name
restaurant
a dozen at
it
least.
It should be restaurant year.
Well, when exactly to what you're saying, restaurants will take the Restaurant Week menu and they'll just leave it on their menu all year long. So it's not really it's kind of like a restaurant year. You're exactly right. It's kind of funny. But we wanted to do something different, and we gave the artistic license, if you speak, to the chefs and restaurateurs for them to do with it what they'd like. And the reason I say that is it could be as little as a restaurant has a daily special, and they want to make one section of the daily special their Foodie Week offerings, mm-hmm, and have a dish or two that is their Foodie Week, you know, entrees.
Right.
We have other restaurants that have created little mini menus, and they'll have a cocktail in celebration of Foodie Week, and an appetizer or a couple appetizers, a couple entrees, a dessert. So it's like a miniature version of it. So, and some of them do, you know, they will have the price fix. You know, they will do the price fix and stuff like that. But we leave it up to the restaurants because, Restaurant Week has been around a long time.
Sure.
I don't know if you know the history of it.
I do.
And,
I was intimately involved in it.
Right. Well, I meant overall, like in the city.
Oh, you know, the city,
Yeah, in the city, it started, I think, during the DNC. They were looking for something to get all the delegates from the DNC to go to, you know, the restaurants, local restaurants. So they created Restaurant Week.
Right, right.
And that was probably, you know, 50, 60 plus years ago. And Long Island Restaurant Week, correct me if I'm wrong, is probably 15 plus, 20.
That's right,
you know,
about
some,
20. It was Steve Wheely. 20. From Hampton,
Right. Absolutely. And he had created that. So we were trying to do something different to kind of separate ourselves from that. But the week part is definitely the same.
Yeah, for sure.
But we get that question a lot. People will ask, is it like, you know, is it like restaurant week?
Sure.
So it is. I mean, it's, you're going to a restaurant and it's a specific week, but we try to, you know, differentiate ourselves. I think people like that because it's something different, you know.
Yeah. It's funny. I had a woman call me one time and we're doing restaurant week. So she calls me up and she goes, can I speak to the manager? I said, yeah, well, I'm the owner. How can I help you? She goes, well, we have a reservation tonight for the restaurant week menu, but John and Mary can't make it. So I want to book that same reservation for next Tuesday, but I want the restaurant week menu. I'm like, well, that's going to be a problem because it's called restaurant week for a reason. It's 8 days. It's
right.
Not a month, you know? Well, I don't understand why you just can't give us the same menu next week because we can't make it here. I said, well, that's not how it works. And she says, you know what? You're a cheap bastard. I said, I'm cheap. You're the one who's trolling for the freebies here. You know what I mean? It's hilarious, you know? Anyway, it's, you know, Restaurant Week, you know, like Foodie Week, it started out really inexpensively. I think it was like $22 or something like that.
It was courses. $19.95, believe it.
I believe it was. That's about right. And you know, it generates a lot of business, and I think that, you know, it's funny. The requirement was you had to have at least three items. It was a three course thing, and you had to have at least three appetizers, three entrees, three desserts, or whatever. And I remember saying to myself, well, first of all, Steve Wheely had to go into hiding, you know, after he started this Restaurant Week thing because the restaurateurs were going to kill him. But it turned out that it was a pretty good idea. It just got to be, you know, there's Restaurant Week, then there's Huntington Restaurant Week, then there's Main Street Restaurant Week, and then there's Restaurant Week between the addresses of 1035 and 1038.
Port Washington, Farmingdale.
There's a list. It's endless.
Yeah.
And so it got diluted a little bit. But I remember saying to myself, if I was going to do it right. And I did, you know, 10 items or whatever. And I had a couple of supplemental charges on some things that were higher, you know. And it turned out to be a really good idea because, I mean, when I was Jewel, I had all those seats. We were doing 400 or 500 people a night, you know. It was, like, insane, you know. And it does, you know, you got to behave yourself with your ingredients. You know, obviously you only have, you know, 20-something bucks, whatever. I think it's at 29 now, whatever. But, yeah, it was a good idea. Generated a lot of business, a lot of traffic.
Right.
You know, so hopefully the same is true with Foodie Week. You'll get, you know, some elevated customer counts and stuff. You know?
We've gotten some impressive stats from
have
it,
you?
Actually.
Oh,
yeah,
great.
I can show you later. Pretty impressive. And we'll send two people because we have a Foodie Week, like a membership, like yeah. a group that actually has been doing the Foodie Week for years now with mm-hmm. us. We send something specific to them, and we will isolate the menus on there, and we'll see who clicks to what.
Oh, wow.
And it's pretty mind-numbing. We just noticed we've been sending it now, even though it starts on Sunday, we've been sending it out to people.
Right.
And we noticed Hunter Restaurant, which is one of the participants, uh-huh. got 500 people went to OpenTable to make a reservation. So we were kind of like, wow, from one send.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and it was just, and no one eats alone, so obviously that's,
sure. yeah, yeah.
you know, yeah. give or take, and it's a lot of people. Like you said, 500, like you had said, that's a really good thing. And one of the reasons we left, you know, the artistic license, I like to say, to, and making up the rules, you know, to the restaurants themselves was going to what you were saying. It started as 1995 Restaurant Week, and I believe it's 46 now.
Is it? Yeah.
And then when you add tax and tip and supplementals, mm-hmm. it's $60, $70.
Right.
So it's a lot of people say, well, why don't you just go out to dinner? You don't need a special week to go to a restaurant. Just go to a restaurant every week and support the restaurant.
Right, so right, right.
That's why we kind of left it alone rather than trying to make it, you know, a cookie cutter kind of a
Is it thing. The same week every year?
We have tried to do that, yeah. yeah. It's pretty much the same week, and we've been doing it in October, and we have kept it, obviously, away from, you know.
The other way.
I think they move it a little, and we move it a little. You know, we don't want yeah, it to yeah. be intercepting or anything.
Yeah,
we want
sure.
it to be two separate things. And we have supported Restaurant Week for years.
Mm-hmm.
I cut my teeth in marketing with restaurants, and we would send out their menus and help them, you know. So we were a big supporter of Restaurant Week and
sure.
helping those restaurants market to their own people to say, hey, just, you know, don't rely on just the people that are coming in from the outside. Let them know through social media, through your emails and mm-hmm. whatever. Let them know about what you're offering.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
and
yeah.
get them into it. I think that, believe it or not, that's a big thing. Like when you're at Bijou, your own people said, hey, let's go see Tom. It's Restaurant Week. You know, it also added to it also.
We found also that it was the more expensive restaurants were getting the more traffic because people saw that as a bargain. Places that people would go to, like Jewel, you know, maybe go to once or twice a year or special occasions, whatever, would come sometimes two times that week or even three times that week just because they could, you know, get in at that price,
right.
you know, which is fine. I mean, you know, it introduces people to the place. And you know, if you're going to come twice a year, fine, come twice a year. You know, maybe a new customer or something. It was always positive that way. You know, when it first started in 1995, I remember Steve Wheely pitching a thing to me, and I'm like, are you out of your mind? I can't make a living at $59.95. You know what
yeah.
I mean? So 19, you know, it's kind of like blood money at that point. But it turned out if you play your cards right, I mean, I used to find, you know, wine bargains and things, you know. And I would, you know, offer the bottle of wine for $23 or whatever it was, you know. It didn't cost us that much. Maybe we got the bottle of wine for $8 or $9, you know.
Right.
So you still make some money, and you pick it up on volume. And, you know, it's like costs are, you know, in the restaurants, it's really kind of a funny thing. I did this talk to students over at the restaurant school over in Nassau Community College, you know. And we got talking about food costs, and I said, you know, It's kind of a moving target. I said, you know, everybody thinks, you know, you got to keep your food cost at like 32% or whatever. And so I gave him this example. I said, let's say, for argument's sake, this is a while ago. I said a hamburger cost you $2 to put out, right? And you charge $10 for it. You have like a 20% food cost. That's pretty good, right? Yeah. Okay, let's say I have a steak cost me $15. And I sell it for $30. That's a 50% food cost, right? Yeah. I said, but you took $8 to the bank. I took $15 to the bank. So be careful, you know what I mean? This is how steakhouses survive. Their food costs are high, but so is their tab, you know what I mean? So
right.
you have more money, more tangible money in your hand than you would, you know. So I said, you know, don't get lost in the percentages, you know. And I think the same thing is true with Restaurant Week or Foodie Week, where, you know, I'm going to give you from the restaurant perspective that, you know, you're doing a dish with, obviously, chicken is going to cost you less than, you know, and braised short rib is less than porterhouse. You know, you just got to pay attention. You can still make money with it. You just got to, you know what you're doing. You know?
Right. Absolutely.
So it works out good if you play it right, you know, if you complain about it and you put your three things out there, and, you know, people go, no, but... You know, when you do 10 items, you know, now people have a choice. They can come back maybe twice that week or three times that week. But if you have three items, it's like, no, I don't like steak. I can eat the chicken, but I'm really not going back for the pasta, you know. When
right.
I put two pastas on there and a chicken, it's kind of, come on, you know. Do it right, you know.
Right. Well, that's why we try to accentuate the fact that it's an elevated thing. It's not necessarily about a price fix or
right.
a meal deal kind of a thing. We want
yeah.
restaurants to do whatever they want to do. And I've had places talk to me and say, well, what should we offer? I said, you know, you can offer your signature dishes because you have people coming from outside that have never been to your restaurant. So obviously you put your best foot forward.
Right.
If it's a beef Wellington or something you make special, then you definitely want to do that.
Sure.
And maybe it's something you don't normally do.
Mm-hmm.
There's one place that does flatbreads and I said to them, why don't you do, you know, put Oysters Rockefeller on top or
mm-hmm.
put, you know, make one with clam sauce.
No pineapples,
you know,
No pineapples. I have a rule.
No pineapples. People are putting all sorts of crazy things on,
oh,
but
yeah,
no pineapples or cucumbers or anything.
Yeah.
But, you know, be different. And we want them to... experiment and try and say, you know what, we're going to get an octopus. We don't normally have octopus, but we're doing it. You
mm-hmm.
know, whatever kind of things that they can get that's, you know,
right.
different to them, you know.
Yeah, no, so it runs from when? It runs from...
So it's this coming Sunday. It's
today.
Today.
Yeah.
Through today the 19th through next Sunday the 26th.
Okay, cool. The 8 days you got, and there's no set price. It just depends on...
There's no set price. You can check out on the website the menus, and a lot of them will have prices, so you know how much they
what
are.
What you're getting into, yeah.
Or you could we put up the menus and we put up the website,
mm-hmm.
so someone could go to the website also and take a look around and see, kind of get a feel for how much, you know, that place is per plate, so to speak, how much it's going to cost.
Yeah,
but that's pretty much it. It's you know, and a lot of these places it's not price prohibitive. And a couple of them have price fixes that are like, wow, you know, and they went that route, which we let them do what they want to do. We feel it's better if we want to have something that's successful for them. Let them do what they do best. Let them do it
mm-hmm.
instead of us saying, hey, we got to pigeonhole you into these. Kind of like what you're saying. You've got three dishes.
You
got to try to squeeze money out of that for $19.95. You know,
we
don't want to do that. We wanted it to be whatever you really, you know. So that's why we say foodies, because real foodies aren't necessarily looking for a discount. They're looking for something special.
Yeah, yeah.
They
right.
want something different, you know.
Well, that's the live-to-eat crowd instead of the eat-to-live crowd. You know?
It's the live-to-eat crowd,
yes. Yeah.
So that's why we wanted it to be a little more about something special.
Yeah, cool. So each restaurant has the, you know, the latitude to do whatever they want. That's a good idea. Good idea. So listen, we're going to take a quick break. We got to make some money here, and we'll come back and we'll continue the conversation with John Richard from Long Island Food Critic.
Come on now, everybody, get ready for a treat. It's time for stepping out for something mighty good to eat. You looking for atmosphere? Well, they got it happening here. They're doing barbecue the way it ought to be. Your sister, brother, significant other, bring all your pals. There's
There's always something smoking at Smoking Al's.
Ribtober keeps on smoking. Mention Playing with Fire and enjoy Al's famous baby back rib dinner any Monday through Friday until 7 p.m. for just $14.99. That's right, a baby back dinner for just $14.99. Dinner includes a choice of a half rack baby backs or Al's famous barbecue pulled pork or chicken, a side and cornbread, all for just $14.99. 22 years, it's still Long Island's favorite barbecue. Smoking Al's, Massapequa Park. For details, call 516-799-4900. And remember, there's always something smoking at Smoking Al's.
There's always something smoking at Smoking Al's.
Proud sponsor of Playing with Fire. Sundays at 9 a.m. on the new 104.7 WHLI.
Welcome back. You're listening to Playing with Fire on 1100 WHLI AM and 104.7 FM, Long Island's own food, wine, and lifestyle show with your host, Tom Shawdell, chef, author, and restaurateur.
Yeah, and here today we're talking to John Richard from Long Island Food Critic. Just talked about Long Island Foodie Week, Town of Oyster Bay Foodie Week, I should say. And I'm curious, let's talk about, you have an organization called Long Island Food Critic, right? Let's talk about that. What's that about? How did it start?
Well, it's been around for decades now. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting and it's good the way you said that as an organization. Because mm-hmm. I get a lot of people that are like, oh, you're the Long Island Food Critic. And as flattering and as lofty as that sounds, I always say it's really an entity, kind of like what you're saying, an organization sure. or an entity. It's not a person. It's right, not right. There's the Long Island. It's more of a
not Peter
an
Giannotti
entity,
or anything.
You know. Right, yeah. Right. Well, yeah, it's just more of it's more of a group of people. And I mean, if there was a person, it probably would be me, you know, as the spear, you know, mm-hmm. spearheading this. But it's really there's a lot more people that go into it than just one person. And it is like it sounds. We critique food, go to different. And the reason we say food critic and not restaurant critic is we don't just critique restaurants. Mm-hmm. We could critique foods and different things like that. We go to different shows, whether they're and they have different specialty foods there, like the specialty food show, the fancy food show, and try different things.
A lot of
talk about that too, right? We went to a chocolate a show recently and tasted chocolates from literally all around the world and became friends with a lot of the people. You know, I have this sack of chocolate. You see, that's 54%, and then 70%. I got this sack of 100%.
Yeah, it's not sweet at all.
No, it's not sweet at all. And the person gave it to me, and I said, "Oh, wow!" I mean, you know, and I said, "When do you how do you have this? Because it's strong."
Oh yeah, totally.
You know, it's like espresso of chocolate.
Yeah,
some strong stuff. So I said, he said to me, he says, and he's from Ecuador. Uh-huh. They have the family owned have their own finca, which is farm in Ecuador. And he says, in his accent, he says, you have one in the morning with your coffee, and then you have one just before you go to bed. That's exactly what he said. And I was just laughing because I was just, it's that strong, but it's like a lifestyle, you know, that's what they do, you know, and it's like, you know, and it was just, it's really amazing, but it's something, like you said, it's not sweet at all. It takes acquiring
big time,
like certain foods, you know.
Yeah, it's not a Hershey bar.
And it's beyond dark. It's you know. Yeah. It's like the twilight zone of dark. It's definitely dark, very dark, you know.
Yeah, I use that when I do elevate. You know, we do some elevated Mexican, elevated Latin cooking, and chocolate's, you know, it's in moles. I use it in my chili, you know. So it's really a great savory ingredient, too. Most people don't realize that.
Right.
You know, you get the higher percentage of 75 and up, you know.
I think historically the first uses of chocolate was spicy. So you're absolutely right, yeah. And someone like you, I'm sure you're sneaking it in as secret ingredients and blowing people's minds a lot of time.
Yeah, we put it in sometimes when you least expect it. But I have a chocolate thing. I mean, if it wasn't for chocolate and red wine, I'd be 150 pounds. It's just, you know. And as much as, you know, they say my age, I'm starting to get up there now. You know, you cut out sugar. I'm like, no, I'd rather cut off 2 or 3 years, you know what I mean? Because they're going to be, like, wasted anyway. I probably won't remember anything. I'd be walking in the walls, you know? But it's just hard to give it up, and sugar's in almost everything you eat, you know? It's hard
to... Either it's put in there, yeah, or it already comes in there.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
Fruit toast and stuff. It's everywhere.
Oh,
so.
Totally. It's hard to get away from. But chocolate to me is a, you know, I mean, it's the difference between, you know, like you have good wine and bad wine and, you know, whatever. It's the same thing with chocolate. You get, you know, most of us grew up on a Hershey bar or a Snickers or something like that, and you get that, so it's fine, you know. But once you get into really artisan chocolate, it's a completely different deal.
Right.
You know, it's just much better and so good, you know. And, you know, they cry about health benefits from, you know, dark chocolate. I mean, I don't know if it's true or not, because you never know. I mean, you know, you see these fad diets come, right? All of a sudden, protein is great. Then it's no, you need carbohydrates. No, 3 years later, it's something else. It's, you know, they don't know
right.
what's going on yet. So I think, you know, moderation, which I've been chasing my whole life and can't seem to catch, is the key, you know. I have an extreme, you know, personality. So whatever I do to the nth degree. But, yeah, I think if you moderate, you know, we see people in the restaurant business all the time. Right now, gluten is the big villain, right? And you see all these, like, kind of, I don't want to call them fad or neurotic, but, you know, we somehow.
It's trendy. It's trendy.
Yeah,
somehow. They become trends, and then people just, they grab on to the trend, and they run with it.
Yeah, we've survived, what, 6 millennia, you know, without worrying about bread. All of a sudden, it's the greatest villain in the world. It's hilarious, you know. And then you know, the vegetarians, but I'm pescatarian. I eat vegetables and fish, sometimes chicken. You know,
well, how about the other one is my favorite, the pescatarian that only eats fish, that eats other fish.
Yeah.
So it gets to be
silly.
It's a neurosis of sorts.
It gets to be silly.
Yeah, it gets to be silly.
That and chop my salad. You know, I mean, anybody over the age of 7, you know, who can use a knife should be able to cut their own lettuce, you know. you're eating like salad through a straw, you know what I mean? Plankton.
Right.
You know,
well, do you feel the chopped salad is still a big thing?
It's not as big as it was, but there's some people that, you know, I'll tell you a funny story. I have a pantry guy who's worked for me for 30-something years, Rafael. He's from El Salvador. Sweetest man on the planet. He's just most even personality, never gets flustered, monster cook. I mean, he just knocks out, you know, he would work the pantry station by himself in Jewel. He'd do 350 dinners. You know, it's crazy. Desserts, salads, the whole thing. He's fabulous. Right? So
he doesn't have to speak to anyone.
No, he doesn't.
That's why he's okay.
Probably, yeah.
you're up front sometimes. You're speaking to people.
Yeah, they can get you.
And everyone, all the waiters, they have to speak to people. So that's why he's okay back there. He's by himself, quiet.
Yeah, he's in a monastery. But anyway, so he gets his order for this woman comes in. She wants a salad chop. So he chops the salad, sends it out. It's not chopped enough. Well, sends it back in, chops it again. Now it's starting to look like plankton, right? Sends it back out. She goes, it's not chopped enough. So he loses his marbles.
She wants a smoothie, I think.
Yeah, exactly. He loses his marbles. He puts it in a Robocool, which is like a commercial food processor, right? And processes it into a paste, right? Sends it back out. Now she goes, I'm not eating that, right? So it comes back. I don't know what's going on. It comes back in, and the waiter said to me, she doesn't want this. I'm like, what is it? He goes, it's a salad. I said, no, it isn't. It's wallpaper paste.
It's
not a
puree
salad.
Now.
Yeah.
It's a puree.
And then Ralphie goes to me, I got frustrated. He told me what happened. I couldn't even get mad at him. I was crying. I'm laughing so hard.
This,
I'm like, that's it. I can't take it anymore, you know? That's the result of all your neurotic complaining, you know?
Well, to go off topic, it's your book. I've read a lot of it.
Uh-huh.
I take a little at a time, and
it's
fun,
you know?
And you talk about people in the restaurant business. And mainly, kind of like the customers, I think, are the ones that are the most bring most of the humor to the the stories. And it's a great read, you know. It's absolutely a great read, and we have that available on Long Island Food Critic as well.
Cool.
We have a book section that has your book in it, and that's kind of like the namesake or eponymous, I guess, of the show.
Flame of Fire, it was the first book,
right?
You know?
Right,
yeah.
And then your next one is the second helping,
right?
Which is more
the natural succession.
The natural succession and more fun stuff to read.
Well, the first one was what I consider to be my 100 craziest customers. And seeing that there was no shortage of talent out there, you know, we have a second one. Because there's
no shortage of talent.
The hits just keep on coming, you know. And it's not, you know, there's some people, oh, you're making fun of your customers. I'm not making fun of my customers. I'm making fun of people's actions and the lengths that people go to drive the rest of us nuts. You know what I mean? And that's all it is. It's a book about the human condition and finding humor in it. It's not like I'm mad, you know.
Right.
You know, cursing these people, whatever.
Well, it's kind of like we laugh at ourselves.
I'm just putting a mirror up, you know. I mean, listen, you obviously needed some attention. I'm about to give it to you. Congratulations.
You also do it like Dragnet, you know. The names have been changed to protect the innocent parties. And you don't really call out anyone.
No, but I've had people.
But if they read it, they might identify themselves in there.
Well, I've had people identify their friends. Right. Page 62 was my friend Gertrude, you know what I mean? I'm like, probably, you know.
Well, not to sound like a psychiatrist, I guess, or a psychologist, there must be certain types, like your stories. If you took, 20 of the stories, you probably have personality types where 10 different people could swear that that person was their friend.
The people that appear in my book would appear in a book if it was the hairdresser, if it was the nail lady, the salon keeper, the checkout person at this. You know, people, they just behave that way. And there's a sense of, I see it on Long Island a little bit, and probably through the country, but there's a sense of entitlement that some people have that, you know, they need this elevated, you know, amount of attention, and they'll go to any kind of lengths to get it. And I've had, Joan Remenick from Newsday called me up when I wrote my first book, and she goes, "You're making some of this stuff up. You have to be making some of this stuff up." I said, "Joan, I'd be Stephen King if I could make this stuff up. Who could think it like, I don't think like this. You know, I'm a reporter, not a writer. I see my characters are formed and my plot lines are out there. You know, I report it through a twisted sensibility. You know, I'm probably as abnormal as they are in a different way. But that's all it is. It's just observation, retention, and hopefully you get your adjectives and verbs in the right spot, you know.
Well, some of them are so funny and so odd and bizarre that it goes under the category, like people say, you can't make this stuff up. You know, it's that outlandish that, you know, you just laugh. It is definitely great humor to just sit and read.
There are little vignettes in there, so it doesn't, you don't have to worry about where you left off. And plot
right.
Line.
It's you not just, like, it doesn't have cliffhangers you have to finish it. It's nice. It's something you can pick up and read a couple and laugh.
The beach and the bathroom, we talk. Take it to the beach, take it to the bathroom, you're in good hands, you know. So, yeah. So, Long Island Food Critic. Now, how did it all come about? How did you start that? And why?
Oh, well, I guess for the love of food and to bring that to people also, and kind of like Foodie Week as well, to bring food to people and bring good food to people, kind of like what you do in a way. You bring excellent food to people, and that's why people, I know I might make you blush, but that's why they praise you. You know, I'll go somewhere and I know people that will just, carry on and talk about, Tom Shodell,
Boy.
And what's ironic, I've known you through the years, and what's ironic, they have this lofty image of you, this untouchable thing, almost, I guess, in a culinary way, saint-like.
Oh, my God.
But you are one of the most normal, down-to-earth, approachable people.
You hear that, Val?
I know.
You hear that, Val? He said I was normal.
No, but, maybe I'm just as crazy, so I feel that's the norm. Depends on what you consider the norm. But you are very, down-to-earth kind of a person, And so, so you bring your love of food. So that, in a way, that's kind of like what we do. And our saying always was, it's not where you go. It's what you eat when you get there.
Yeah.
Because there could be, and we love this term, a highfalutin place. And you go there, and you get that dish, and it's terrible. But their other dishes are amazing.
Yeah.
Or you can go to this, I'll use an old term, greasy spoon, this really, little luncheonette kind of place, where they've got this soup that is the most delicious thing you've ever had in your life.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not about celebrating the place necessarily. We, when we review somewhere, we're more reviewing, hey, when you go here, this is what you want to. Mm-hmm. This is what you want to try. This is great. These are great.
Sure.
We don't throw anyone under the bus say, hey, this is terrible.
Yeah, it's unnecessary.
We don't do that.
It's unnecessary.
We find it to be unnecessary. And, but I guess, newspapers or magazines, they kind of have to do that because, like, when you're on the LIE and there's a big car accident over there, everyone stops and looks and turns their head. So in news, and that's why we see the news at night, and there's so many train wrecks and car wrecks, and that's what gets people's attention.
Yeah, you know, leads, you know.
You know, right. It just gets people, you know, watching, I guess. It gets viewers or clicks or whatever. We don't do that. We want people, we kind of like want to advise people, these are the places you want to go. This is what we found that's, you know, incredible. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a big important part of it is having the knowledge about it. Because we see a lot of people nowadays, it's almost, I mean, I'm sure you'll concur, everyone's a food critic.
Oh, boy. You know? Well, the internet allowed that.
The internet allowed that. But the problem is they don't necessarily have the knowledge. And I'm not saying that in a bragging kind of way, but to deliver a true critique of something, you must know about it. Otherwise, it's just random criticism from someone who has no clue what they're talking about.
Yeah, that's why they coined the term educated opinion.
Oh, right, educated opinion, right. That's exactly it. And we see people in various different platforms. And the term that makes me laugh is when people go, this is the best I've ever had. And you know that's the only time they've ever had this item.
Yeah, for sure.
So, but that's become a popular, you know, term. But that's the problem is people don't know how what something's really all about when they talk about it. They just randomly.
The one that drives me crazy, it's overpriced. Based on what?
Well, that's what it is.
Is a Lamborghini overpriced?
Right, right. If you, and I have people I know very close to me, and it's a younger gal, she's been her 20s, very dear person, and she will be out there looking and, you know, and she will use the term, I didn't think it was worth it. Well, and it's kind of like what you said. If you can't afford it, then don't get it.
Mm-hmm.
Because that steak at what the price I'm looking at is worth it. But if that you're getting that steak instead of paying PSE&G, it's not worth it. You can't do it, you know?
Yeah. I've always thought that everybody has, regardless of what you're buying, whether it's a steak, a guitar, a car, a house, everybody has a number in mind that they're comfortable with. Once you start to exceed that number, your anxiety level goes up in direct relation to how much it's going to cost, you know? And then all of a sudden it's, well, you know, it was all right, but John Lennon didn't serve it to me, and I thought that, you know, I should have gotten this and that and the other thing, you know, didn't come with a house and a, you know, vacation. Could you just, you know, go to a place where you're more comfortable with the price? It's, you know, nobody's, you know. They say, you know, I remember somebody telling me, yeah, Jewel, yeah, some of this stuff is overpriced. Overpriced? My rent's $45,000 a month. My payroll's $50,000 a week. You know, my local bill is $15,000 a month. I'm overpriced? No, dude. Somebody's got to pay for this.
Right,
you know?
Right.
It's like, what are you basing it on? You're basing it on your ability to pay. Not what the thing is worth, not what the thing costs, not what the overhead is, not what the help costs, any of that, which is all in play, you know, on a menu price.
Absolutely.
You're basing it on the fact that you aren't comfortable spending that much money for that item. Don't buy it. You know, nobody's forcing you to come here, you know? So, I mean, listen, I've spent more money on food and wine than the average bear because for me it's research and development, my business, the whole thing.
I've seen you out of a lot of places.
Oh, yeah.
I've had restaurateurs say to me, we think Tom Chaddell was here.
Oh, really?
What is he like? You know?
Like, crazy. You know,
yes, that probably was Tom. He came to eat at your place. Just first of all, you like a good meal.
Of course.
And you like to see what other people are doing, like you said. It's kind of like a little bit of research, you know. But yeah, I find that, you know, it's funny, but
I'll give you a funny example. I took my daughter to Masa in the city for her 30th birthday. It was a while ago, right? It was 12 years, whatever. And, you know, Masa's very highly touted sushi place, probably the most expensive in the country. At the time, I think my bill was somewhere north of $1,300 for two of us, right? Which is a pretty expensive dinner.
Right. It's up there.
I didn't think the place was great. You know, I've been to better sushi places, but I didn't think it was overpriced. He's in the Time Warner building. He's got, you know, right in the middle of Manhattan. I mean, I know what the costs are.
Oh,
it's
colossal.
Would I go back? No, because I wasn't blown away. But it's not about the price. It was about the food, you know. I thought it was fine, but I didn't think it was, oh, my God. I mean, you know, because it's hard to get blown away after you've been to thousands of restaurants. There's another place I go to in Boston called Oh Yeah, which every time I go there, I'm like, oh my God, that was insanely good.
Right.
And it was, you know, one third less than the other one is, you know.
Right.
So it's not a question of overpriced. To me, it's a question of would I go back? Did I like the food, you know? I knew what it was going to cost going in. You know what I mean?
Right.
It is what it is. You know, you can look at a menu online and then you go to say, oh, this place is overpriced. Well, you should have thought about that before you got in the car. You know what I mean? If you're worried about the price, then go look it up. The menus are online everywhere, you know? I just think it's so unfair to you know, for people to like throw that out there in the ether, because there's a lot of people that listen to, oh, yeah, well, that's a lot of money, but I don't know, you know. Well, you probably don't. Not belong, but you probably shouldn't be going to a place like that if you're not comfortable with the. I'm not. Could I afford a Ferrari? Probably. Could I pull it off? Yeah, I could pull it off. You know, would I be depressed every month when a payment came in? I'd be
absolutely.
Like, oh, what did I do? What the hell's the matter with me, man? You know what I mean?
Right. You're absolutely right. Yeah, it's like someone getting a Bentley and going, it wasn't worth it.
It wasn't worth the
because
price.
Because they can't afford their mortgage now, and now they're living in the Bentley.
Exactly.
So, of course, it's not worth it,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Well, you should have thought about that. You know?
What is it? I think it was Clint Eastwood said it best. A man's got to know his limitations.
Amen. You know?
If you're going somewhere that's, you know, out of your league, so to speak,
yeah,
you know, then, you know, don't blame the food.
Yeah.
Don't blame the chef.
It's your own fault.
You probably can find a place, and that's kind of like driving to the point of what we do. We try to let people know about other places. Hey, if this is your price point, there's some great meals over at that price point, too.
Listen,
there's a lot of good things out there.
One
you know?
Of the best clam chowders I ever had in my life was in a diner in Wantagh.
Right.
So I don't discount anything, man. I mean, I always thought that the rating systems were kind of unfair. You know, when you had the food critics out there, you had the one star, two star, three, four, whatever. Why don't you divide these things up? And Newsday did it to an extent because they had two reviews every month. They had Peter Giannotti's review,
right.
Which was
higher
the,
end.
The higher end. And they had Joan Remenick, and she would do the lower end places, which I thought was fair. But you can have a four. Why can't you have a four-star diner? I've been to diners that are great. I've been to diners that were terrible, right? So, but you can't rate a diner against La Bernardin. I mean, you know, it's just it's unfair. It's
right.
Just not. It's apples and hand grenades at that point. You know?
Right. Absolutely.
But I think you can take pub-style restaurants, and some are better than others. You can have a four-star pub, a three-star pub. You know, pizza place the same way. I mean, I just went to New Haven recently. You know, on a pizza run. With a friend of mine, and we ate at Frank Pepe's, and then we ate at Sally's down the block. And it's funny, Frank Pepe's gets all the press, you know, for the clam pie, this, that, and the other thing. I didn't think it was that good. You know, I went down the block to Sally's, and I'm like, wow, this is, like, insane. The pizzas were great. And there's a place in Westchester called Johnny's where, you know, again, I don't know if it's the flour or the flavor or whatever, but I've never eaten more than two pieces of pizza in my life, you know what I mean? I ate a whole pie. I mean, it's
right,
a lot
right.
Of, you know, and I didn't feel like I swallowed a small farm animal when
right.
I was done, you know, which is normally what happens, you know.
Yeah, well, it's very bloating.
There's a quality there that, you know, again, it's probably 00 flour, which is a little less, you know, fattening or whatever. But still, it was like, wow, what an experience.
Was it wood-fired? Well, how was it?
Johnny's is not.
No.
Pepe's is coal. And Sally's, I'm not sure. I think Sally's might be coal also.
Okay.
But just, you know, the difference, my whole point is, you know, now you're rating, you know, like apples to apples. Now I'm rating a pizza place against a pizza place, not against La Bernardin, a Jewel or whatever.
Right, absolutely. You know what I mean? That's so, you know, that's why we say it's not where you go, it's what you eat when you
sure,
get there.
Yeah,
and it's
yeah.
All about what you're having,
yeah.
Not necessarily. Because you'll find a great place, a great, say, a high-end steakhouse or a very mm-hmm. high-end restaurant that maybe they just do this other dish just to accommodate people.
Yeah.
We'll throw the dish that everyone does to accommodate people. Chicken parm to accommodate
yeah, yeah, yeah.
people.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's not there. That's not what you're going there for. But there's somebody at the table that wants the chicken parm.
Sure.
You know? So there's always that dish at the high expensive place that's not their best dish.
Mm-hmm.
So don't judge the place by that either,
right,
you know?
Right, right, right.
And the same way this little place that might not, you know, it looks like a broken down, run down place. And it's got an amazing, you know, bisque or something.
Yeah, yeah.
And I tell people, you know, you have to realize, you have to appreciate the hominess of the rundown place that's been there for 30, 40 years because they're obviously there not based on their architecturality of the building.
They're appealing to somebody.
Right. They must have good food because, you know, people aren't going there for the looks,
sure.
You know. So
sure.
It's... it's usually it usually ends up being a good place with something, but you got to figure out what that dish is.
Yeah. You know, I used to go. There was a place on Old Country Road years ago, an Italian restaurant. I can't remember the name of it. Now it's Fratelli. It's across from where Fortunoff's is. And it was run by a really nice guy. He was from Westbury. And then they had a chef there, and he was an older fella. And he made the best penne amatriciana I ever had in my life, right? Better than mine, better than my friends, better than anybody that's ever made it. It was like nuts, you know? And I used to go there like once a month with my daughter when she was a kid. And the thing was the size of a small
country. It was like family style for one.
Yeah, exactly. So we'd split it. It was great, you know? And I ran into him years later in, it was like a Home Depot or some silly thing. He's, oh, Tom, you know, I was the chef at that place. Oh, geez, really? You were the guy with the amatriciana? Yeah. He goes, you want me to, I can give you the recipe. I'll tell you how I made it. I said, you know what? No. I'd rather it be a memory that I want.
Right.
I don't want to try it. That's yours. You did it better than anybody I've ever seen. I just want to like celebrate you in that dish, man. I don't want to know how to make it. I don't want to even go near that, you know. And it was fun. We had a nice little conversation. I had 20 minutes or whatever, you know.
Good Some guy. Things are better left unknown.
Yeah. Absolutely. I just want to enjoy it. I don't want to think about it that hard. I just want to love it, man. It was just absolutely fabulous. Stu, you're curiously quiet today.
How could anybody speak when the two of you are so deep into it?
I was thinking, I thought you fell asleep over there or something. Let's go down and poke him with a broom handle.
Well, some of our listeners will be very excited to hear less me.
I know Roger's going to be happy. He's always saying, tell him to shut up. Oh, God. Yeah, so why don't you give us a whole thing about, you know, where we find you and how we get a hold of you and, you know, the whole, you know, internet thing or whatever.
Yeah, well, foodieweek.com is where you go for the information for Foodie Week. And there's nothing else. It's not like with the Restaurant Week. You got to go to Long Island Restaurant Week or Pittsburgh Restaurant. Yeah. It's Foodie Week, the one, the only. And with Long Island Food Critic, again, also longislandfoodcritic.com. Uh-huh. There's a little change there. We were, still are, longislandfoodcritic.com. Mm-hmm. And we had so much stuff up there. And we still do. Because we left stuff up there from 2005 probably.
Oh, wow.
And we didn't, but restaurants linked to it. So we didn't want to just take it down and put up the new site. We changed the new site to LI Food Critic.
Okay.
People like it better. It's short. Everyone likes everything short. And we said, let's just keep it up like a legacy thing. And this way, if a restaurant has a review on there or whatever, we're not breaking the link. And then you go to the page and it says, oops, or whatever silly thing they put up to say.
Yeah.
So we kept all that stuff up there as well.
Cool.
And I was just looking at the other day. I'm like, wow, look how many events we've gone to. You know, because we did a review for each event. We did a little review and put something up to help. To help the charities, because a lot of these events were charity events.
Sure.
And so we would help out the charities.
Nice.
And a lot of charity, I would go to a charity and say, okay, what are you missing? They say, we don't have any bread. I would call someone I know. Augie, Cardinal. And I'd call him and say, Augie, I need bread.
Yeah.
I'd go, and I have semolina all over my car now. He just fills the car up with bread, and we donate it to the charity. You know,
nice.
So we kept all those memories and all those things up of the different places because a lot of them link to it. We didn't want to be one of those, you know, people go to it and it goes, oh, it's a broken link.
Yeah,
I guess they're not in business anymore. Yeah. We didn't want that. We said let's just keep it all going. It's not that big of a deal.
Town of Oyster Bay Restaurant Week. This from today until next Sunday.
Foodie Week. See, everyone
Sorry
knows
about
that.
Yeah. And then we have the Oyster Fest today, right? Today's
That's
last
correct.
Day
of the Oyster That's Fest. Correct. Oyster Festival was Saturday and Sunday. So as you're listening to the show,
Yesterday
you can
today.
Rally the troops and come on out. There's many ways of coming there. Public transportation is really, really suggested. You can take the train at the Long Island Railroad and get off at the Syosset train station. Which is the Oyster Bay train station, which is right there, and there's a trolley. There's a couple of schools you can park at, take a trolley up. But it's going to be great weather and some really, really good food. There's oyster chowder, there's oyster stew, there's fresh shucked oysters. and look forward to seeing you there.
All right, so we're going to close the show. We're going to thank John Richard from Long Island Food Critic for coming by and sharing that information with us. And we'll close the show with Tom's Three Keys to Life, which, like usual, are life's too short to drink bad wine. Treat every meal like it was your last and keep chocolate in your life as important as sex and pizza.
Amano Osteria and Wine Bar has been created by Adam Lovett and Tom Shordell to bring the feel and flavors of a true Tuscan Osteria to the North Fork. Amano showcases local growers, farmers, cheese, and winemakers, marrying their ingredients with the taste traditions of the Tuscan countryside. The casual appeal, the flavors of Italy, and a moderate price structure appeal to all, ensuring year-round patronage. This North Fork eatery sends out snappy salads and seafood, pastas and antipasta, along with a respectable wine list. Amano features local vineyards and Italian varietals from the U.S. and Italian wines. The kitchen remains open until 11 and has established a later dining crowd, sparking a local nightlife dining scene. Amano is on the cutting edge of a new high-quality and affordable dining experience on the North Fork. Amano Osteria and Wine Bar, 13550 Main Road in Matatuck. Serving dinner daily, Amano is also open for lunch on Saturday and Sunday. For reservations and further information, call them at 631-298-4800 or visit them on the web at amanorestaurant.com.